This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Monday, October 12th, this is season 5, episode 6 of the Four Stars First Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony. With me this week, we have Lucas.
Hello, hello.
Tommy.
Hey, what's up?
And welcoming him to the podcast for the first time, Joe.
Hello, everybody.
See, I thought about calling you English Joe, but that doesn't that doesn't work because we already have Joe Leslie, who's technically English. We could call him Manchester Joe.
But, yeah, his accent beats mine anyway, so.
Joe, you were a longtime Chicago Spurs. You were there at the beginning of us founding the club here in Chicago, the supporters group. So you've been with us for a very, very long time. But you've also traveled around a lot, too. But I want to hear about how you became a fan of Tottenham.
Sure. I mean, it really wasn't a choice. My grandfather, during the war, I don't know if you know that they used to house munitions at White Hart Lane, and my grandfather was one of the officers there, and just decided to choose Tottenham. He didn't really follow football, but he spent so much time in the stadium during the war that that's how it ended up. And then after the war, he started going to matches, and then once season tickets became a thing, he bought season tickets. And then same thing with my father. My father, Spurs fan because of my grandfather, and you know, we've kept those tickets since, you know, my grandfather had them. Haven't obviously been in the new stadium yet because COVID and everything. I was supposed to go this year, and you know, you guys have all met my little boys, and they're both still living in Texas, diehard Tottenham fans. So, yeah, I mean, it's the short story. I honestly didn't have a choice, but it was a good non-decision that I had.
Yeah. Well, and you also have been at the founding of a number of clubs and involved with a lot of supporters clubs all over the United States, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, I left Chicago 5 years ago, went over to San Francisco, was a part of their supporters group for about a year. Great guys. I mean, we had so much fun, especially those 4:30 kickoffs. It was, you know, just great coming across the Bay Bridge to try and get there. Then I was part of Denver Spurs. After Denver, I moved to Salt Lake City, and they didn't have a Spurs group, so just decided we'd start one up there. Now here in Boston, another great group of guys. It's kind of funny. Last season, we left our original pub and we went to a pub called The Globe, which some of you old Chicago Spurs will remember. The Globe got shut down. So now we're at our new place, Cleary's, in Back Bay. And it's good atmosphere. Kind of, it's a big place, you know, three rooms with a basement. And yeah. Good times with those guys. I'm really going to miss them.
But you're going to be coming back to us is what I've been hearing. It looks like there's a good chance you're coming back to Chicago.
Yep. Yeah. Honestly, just waiting for a phone call tonight to tell me when and where to report. Yeah, I will be getting transferred from Boston Spurs to Chicago Spurs within probably the next 2 to 4 weeks.
Welcome back to the club. It will definitely certainly add to the atmosphere at the pub, I think. Tommy?
Oh, yeah. Just an interesting tidbit. I don't even know if Joe remembers, but he's actually the reason why I'm part of Chicago Spurs. It's a blessing and a curse. I have an insanely good memory, but I remembered it was tail end of the 2010-11 season. I'm at the Globe. And it was against Liverpool first, and that the result of that match, first time we won at Anfield in like 20 years. But beginning of the match, Joe's like, "Oh, hey, you saw me in my Dawson kit." I remember Joe, he had his white Vandervaart kit, And he's like, oh, there's a bunch of us in the back. We're all Chicago Spurs, you know, meet everybody, hang out. And let's say the rest is history.
Yeah, definitely. Well, welcome to the podcast, Joe. I think you're a great addition. We have a relatively short episode, I think, today for people, since we covered most of what we had to last week. But I think it gives us a good conversation to reflect on things a little bit. But I do want to break into the conversation and talk about the international break. Not that we spend a lot of time talking about Spurs players and how they played on the international break, but just the overall picture. And we started this international break, and we immediately had an injury scare. And it's not the one you guys think I'm going to talk about. It was Reguilón. We had an injury scare with him where it looked like he may have been injured. And Lucas, I know how you feel about these international breaks. How did you react when you heard that news?
Couldn't even. It was just coming, you know. That's what I always feel with international breaks is – I'm always just petrified that we're going to lose guys. And in the past couple years, at least under the Pochettino era, it seemed like we lost at least one every time, whether it be from getting overworked or whether it be Serge punching a cooler or something that he did in the dressing room that one time and broke his wrist. Like we always just seem to find a way to get these guys injured. And with Reguilón, it was immediately like super scary because he has only been here for a couple weeks and we've only got to see him. We're just seeing the fruits of his labor and like seeing how he's going to be an awesome part. And we're all getting excited about him. And then all of a sudden he's the first name that pops up for a potential injury knock. But yeah, it was just like a nightmare, but I'm glad that it does seem a lot less serious than they originally reported.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder if some of the injury news is a bit of Mourinho asking players to, you get a little bit of a pain. You don't play through it when you're on international. You need to react and pull yourself right away. Maybe there is that change that Pochettino didn't necessarily have as much of. He seemed to take that international play a lot more seriously. He wanted his players to perform there. But I wonder if that's the case. Like, yeah, you get a little knock and you call yourself out of it. Maybe even like a little bit on the sly, like you just tell them you're hurt. I don't want to say that that's necessarily the case because I do think these guys want to play for their country. But I think there's an element. We don't mess around with internationals anymore, which I kind of do like. Tommy, any thoughts on Reguilón before we talk about the other player that had the injury scare?
Honestly, I saw the report of it. I didn't see it, but I'll just roll with it. So I guess I'm happy that he's doing all right now and hopefully stays healthy because he's just been, I know he only played a couple of games for us, but it's been a breath of fresh air. So I'm pretty pleased about that.
Yeah, he was really impressive against United. Yeah, I didn't know much about him. Until we signed him, and that's when I started reading about him, and I was really impressed from him against United. That's too. Once he gets his firm grasp into the squad, I think he's going to be a really good squad player.
When he's so fast, I mean, I don't think we've had a player as fast as him since Kyle Walker. I mean, Kyle Walker might be a little bit faster, but not much. This guy has some serious speed and talent, and I think we're lucky to have him, even if it is just for the 1 year. I hope it's for longer, but for 1 year, well, I'm liking what I'm seeing already. I'm glad he's not hurt. But I think we should move the conversation along to the other player that came up hurt. And for that one, Tommy, we have a question from Rick on, don't we?
Yes, we do. It's more of a statement followed by a question, but I want to kick Gareth Southgate in the balls for playing Kane when he has a slight muscle problem. Thoughts? And for those who don't know, it's our good friend Rick who provided the question.
I miss that guy.
You'll see him at the pub for sure when you get out here. For me, I'm really irritated that he wasn't allowed to leave the squad when he picked up the injury, however minor it was. And I understand he's the captain of England and that they want to keep him at least present. But England's been doing fine without Harry Kane playing. I mean, he's like they defeated Wales in the friendly that was probably unnecessary, and then when they the Nations League Cup or whatever nonsense it is for that does kind of count. He, you know, they didn't need him either to get past Belgium. So I cut the man loose, let him go home. But now it looks like he's going to be playing in the third game this week. Is what the news is. Southgate wants to use him. I'm kind of irritated by that, as I know Rick is, if he asked the question. Other thoughts on it? Lucas, you must have a thought.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's just unfortunate. It's one of the reasons I hate, I'll stand on my soapbox and rail against international football any chance I get. But it's just like, we got to remember that Southgate has a completely different set of objectives and goals. He doesn't care about Tottenham Hotspur. He's not worried about whether or not we win a trophy this year or finish top four. His job is to win games for England. And whether he sees fit to use Kane every time, which sometimes seems like the case, Harry Kane's getting 180 minutes in four games or in 4 days on some of these international weekends. I would like to see more rotation, especially during the Nations League. You would think this would be a time where it's not like it's Euro qualifier or World Cup qualifier. You would hope to see Southgate actually spending these games to try and develop young players or give other guys opportunities instead of just beating the same guys over and over. But yeah, like I said, we just got to remember that Southgate doesn't care about us. He's got his job to do. His job's on the line.
Joe, have you watched any of these games?
Yeah, so I, being English, even though it doesn't sound it, I have a difference of opinion than Luke does about this. You know, growing up when I was living in England, you know, we were crap. I mean, we had, you know, in the late 80s, we had a chance, the mid 80s, we had a chance with the hand of God, and you know, then we had the Beckham era, and it's. I think it's different for an English person. It's a sense of national pride with your English team, because this is the squad that Southgate's built, I think, can actually win a trophy. And just like Spurs, England hasn't won something since 66. You know, they're dying as a country to win silverware, and I see where Southgate's coming. But as a diehard Spurs fan, yeah, I don't want to see Kane get run ragged. It's difficult because I know that Kane, as the captain, wants to win, wants to play, but also in the back of his mind, his love for Spurs, he wants to do the same thing there. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. I don't want to see him get played against Denmark. Denmark, I think, is going to be a real tough game, and if Harry's got sort of a knot going, that's the game that he's going to actually turn it into something full blown. So, yeah, that's where I'm at.
Tommy, any different thoughts?
My thoughts are, I don't know. What I think it's kind of irresponsible because for Southgate to play him on a friendly. Because I'll just say this. Looking at the Nations League, they're up by 1 point against Belgium. I get that because they want to get to the nation's final. By the looks of it, they're not going to get relegated to the B division. So in terms of that part, they're going to be fine. My issue is if they're going to make it ahead to the nation's finals, don't play them because we don't need to. Or Southgate doesn't need to. The other thing is there's an upcoming striker, Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He's been on fire for the start of the season. Play him. He's only 23. He's not fully established yet. He needs to be pushing for a Euro spot next summer. Harry Kane as a captain, the way he's been playing right now, his spot is set in stone, barring injury or whatever. Danny Ings, he's 28, but he's still unproven on the national level. So those two, I think they should be getting more of the playing time in that aspect. I know they tied Denmark last game, so this is going to be a little tricky, but let's err on the side of caution for Southgate, because the other thing is if Harry Kane is fresh when he's not playing for England, when he doesn't need to, he's going to deliver for England. But this works in the long run in terms of tournaments or for actual matches for England that matter, like Euro World Cup qualifying or actual Euros and World Cup. So if he's going to be fresh playing into those matches, in theory, Southgate would reap the benefits from that as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, good conversation. Any final thoughts before we move on to the next topic? I think this probably is a good spot to move on. We're all happy to have the international break be over and we can watch Tottenham play. I want to move the conversation along to the Europa League roster. So the roster for the Europa League did come out this past week. So I'll go run it through really fast. Our goalkeepers are Lloris and Hart. Defenders, Doherty, Reguilón, Alderweireld, Dier, Aurier, Davies, and Carter Vicker actually made the roster here. Midfielders, Højbjerg, Son, Winks, Bale, Lamela, Sissoko, Bergwijn, Moura, Ndombele, and Jack Clark made it. And then Kane and Vinicius for the forwards. Notably missing on this roster, Gedson Fernandez did not make this roster, and Danny Rose, who I think we're probably not shocked. Sure. Any thoughts on this?
Where's Dele?
Oh, I guess Dele did not make it either.
No, I see it. He's at the top of the list.
He's
on list A.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I'm looking at the list. I was looking at the list on the. All right, that scared me for a minute.
Yeah. Oh no, Dele is on the list. Yeah, but I didn't read him. I think he's missing from my list.
Yeah, that's the one I was reading. So.
Yeah. But what do we think? No surprise on Rose. Like, I think Rose has certainly had a falling out with the squad. We've talked about it on the podcast in the past. As much as I love the man for what he brought and the history, like there was always kind of that locker room issue, or at least the behind the scenes issue, talking to the press in the off season, kind of causing trouble. And he's certainly waiting out his contract here. I'm not shocked that he didn't make the squad. Are you guys shocked that you think it's a sign that Fernandez is gone? When his loan deal runs out in the winter, Lucas, I think you signaled.
No, I actually don't know. I've never been like overly high on Jetson, but I think Mourinho trusts him, so I don't know if we will see him just finish out his loan and go back. I'd be interested to see how that plays out, but I could see Mourinho giving him like some kind of squad role moving forward in the future. I'm not sure. Maybe there's some logistical reason in terms of different like rules about Europa, what kind of squad depth in terms of nationality or whatever, how we have like homegrown stuff. Like maybe that's one of the reasons that he didn't make this, but I was expecting to see him feature in a lot of these games, so that is a shock to me, as well as Jack Clark. I mean, that's a positive shock, but apparently he had been doing a really great job in training and got rewarded with the spot, or it might be an English thing too. So there's probably some logistic that we don't have all the answers to.
Well, and Carter Vicker may have qualified as home. Doesn't he qualify as homegrown?
Yeah, he was born in Southend, and he played with Spurs as a youth. So that was probably the main reason.
Yeah.
And Jack Clark.
Same with Jack Clark. And for the omission of, well, Danny Rose, that's obvious, but Jetson and Gazzaniga, it's just because there's not enough room. For example, what is it? Eric Dier, he doesn't qualify as a homegrown player for Premier League aspect, but in terms of UEFA, he's English-born, so he qualifies. Ben Davis, he doesn't, but he's Welsh, you know? So it's those two are the big random sticking points. And also, we're not like Manchester City, Chelsea, and the other heavy hitters in terms of, like, I mean, we have good squad depth now, but we're missing a few people in terms of having a real full squad, I would say, in terms of Europe.
Yeah. Thoughts, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be surprised if Danny Rose ever puts on a Spurs shirt again. I mean, the rumors of him going to Brentford, I think I got like 6 alerts just talking about him today about going to either one of those. And Fernandez, I just, he obviously hasn't impressed, but I don't think he's really been given the shot to impress either. You know, I would have liked to see him a little bit more on the, you know, the couple preseason, what do we have, 3 preseasons this year? But yeah, I mean, we just have a tough time with these loans from, you know, European teams that I don't think we're giving the guys enough chance. And, you know, we end up getting rid of them and then they go, you know, go and excel somewhere else. The Premier League is just a difficult place to, you know, get your bearings and become a superstar. And, you know, this 1-year loan deal, I just don't think that's enough time to actually give the guy a shot, especially if he's not getting the playing time that he needs.
Especially coming into January transfer window too, where exactly. It's like he came in, there was COVID. So, I mean, he hasn't had a proper opportunity to even find himself or his role. So,
no.
But again, like I said, Mourinho seems to trust him. So I think that there could be something there if you can find like some ways to get on the pitch, because it won't be your own.
But who would you take?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, who would you take off to put him in? I mean, I'm looking at
international players.
Yeah, I'm just looking, and who would I remove from that squad to put him in to give him that shot?
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be somebody like Carter Vickers has no future at this team. He's either getting on that spot because of like homegrown rules or to try and boost some kind of resale value or something there. But like, not one of us thinks that Carter Vickers has like a role to play in Spurs' future. So,
I got some clarification. I actually looked. So this issue with Dyer, Davis, and actually Matt Doherty, they don't qualify as association trained for European competition. So, as I said, Dyer being English, he was trained at Sporting Lisbon in Portugal. Then Davis, he's not counted because of the Welsh League. Because Swansea was in the English FA. But a little known fact, he actually was in Denmark for 3 years because his dad had a job there. So he was like with some. Matt Doherty, he actually missed a 3-year requirement by a few months when he was with Wolves. So he was there for like 2 months and change. So because of that, so I think if Doherty was there for the full 3 years, I would assume that Jensen would have been in the squad.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. I do think Jensen was a bit of a panic buy when he got hurt, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't have value. And I agree with you guys that he hasn't really gotten the chance. I don't know, given the types of matches we have coming up, maybe the next round of the League Cup, he might be able to get a chance. Like, we might see him come off a couple times, but I don't know if he's going to have that much opportunity before his contract runs out in December. And I just don't know if we're going to spend that kind of money on a player that hasn't proven yet whether it's his fault or not. But I do think it kind of gives us a picture of when they pick a Europa League squad of who's in, who's out. And it does create, I think, an interesting conversation. But I do want to move along to the next conversation as well. And I, before we go to half, I really wanted to take the chance to reevaluate our predictions, because we all made our season predictions before we made some major transfers, like Reguilon and Bale, and then Vinicius all came in after we all made our predictions. So I want to give people a chance to kind of reevaluate where how far we think we really can go this year. And after this strong week, I think it, like we're all riding that high, whether that high is going to carry us through the whole season. But do people think? And I'll start because I kind of predicted when we started the season that we'd finish in fifth place. I do think we can climb higher than fifth place now with the squad that we have, with Bale coming in, how well Son and Kane are playing. I think there's a lot of promising going on in the squad. We have a defensive midfielder now in Højbjerg. I think we might be able to creep into maybe third or even second place this year. Now, I did pick us to both win the League Cup and the Europa League, so I don't think I need to change those predictions. I do think Mourinho is going to push for at least a cup, and I think we'll have a shot at one. Whether we pull it off or not, I don't know, but I'm going to stick with those two predictions myself. I still think FA Cup will probably crap out of as much as I'd much rather get that cup than a League Cup. I just don't see us second half of the season is probably when fatigue starts to set in and maybe we start having some player injuries and stuff like that. But I could see us getting League Cup and maybe eking our way into Europa League final. So I'll keep those and I'm going to move us up to, I'll say second place. I'm going to go for it and say second place. I think we can finish second now. Anybody else want to change their predictions? And I know, Joe, you didn't have initial predictions, so you can make yours. And then we can just talk about, in general, some of the improvements in the squad. We have a couple questions that go to that as well. So let's go with Lucas next.
I think I thought we were going to win the League Cup. I think I said we would bomb out of Europa in like the round of 16 maybe, or the quarters. I think I said we're going to win the FA Cup and finish top four. I think I'm standing by all that, except maybe that we can up it and say we're going to win. Give me the Europa. We're just going to vacuum up all the trophies, suck it in. I think we will. I will revise my what was my pick, Tommy, that I said the other pick where I said Ndombele won't start 5 Premier League games. I think I'm already halfway.
He starts less than 5 games.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get smoked on that one, but I will be happy to eat my words if that's true. So,
Tommy, any changes, or are you keeping to your initial prediction?
I actually predicted we're going to win or get fifth, but I think it's actually, I don't know, right now it's kind of a disarray. I have City winning. I mean, they could make a huge run. They haven't looked so good in the first 4 games, but... And then I have United third. I think we're going to at least get third right now just based on what we have. I think we have a good start to the season. I don't know. It just really depends on how things go with Europa League and League Cup. I mean, we want to play a few more matches, so that's not bad, but I guess... Depends what happens at the second half of the season with FA Cup congestion. And if we're still in Europa League, which I would assume we are, but I don't know. I think third seems like a very something safe right now. I still believe that, you know, Astonville, Everton, they're probably going to tail off. Liverpool, yeah, they lost bad to Astonville, but they're going to pick up the pace again. Once everybody's healthy for Man City, I think everybody's going to come back. Or they'll come roaring back. Just depends where. But, yeah.
Okay. Joe, since you're – we already made our predictions on air, some of us, and some of us just group. But if you just want to go with, like, each competition, where you think we'll finish is probably a good place to go. Like, what do you think now? And some reasoning behind it.
Yeah, I mean – I think we're going to finish third in the league. It's just there's no rhyme or reason. I think I always, even back in the day when I was in Chicago, I think I always said we're going to finish third. I posted on Facebook, I think it was the Boston Spurs. It was Boston Spurs, that we are going to win the league. And then right after, I commented Cup before the Chelsea game. So I do think we are going to win the League Cup. I don't know why, but here's my prediction for Europa. If we top the group, we're going to win the Europa Cup. If we come in second in the group, we're going to crash out the next round. There's no rhyme or reason to that either. It's just I definitely think that Jose is going to win us some silverware this year. And I really hope Dave Bolton's listening to this because, Dave, he is going to win us some silverware. And you're going to have to be happy about that, my friend.
I think I know what Lucas wants to chime in about.
Oh, yeah. No, actually not. Actually not. As, I mean, as okay. This isn't where you think it was going. I was going to make a Europa thing. But as the leader of Team Jose since the second we got him and the leader of Potch out and no Potch November 2019, the no, like, that's not where I was going to go, although he is going to bring us in some silverware. I was going to say, with the way our fixture congestion actually lines up, you know how we have that run that's like November, December, that's like a pretty gnarly lineup where I think we play like Leicester, Liverpool, or Leicester's at the back end, but it's like Chelsea, Arsenal,
Scum, yeah,
Liverpool. We play like a bunch of amazing teams all. I think Palace is the only break we have in there.
I wouldn't even call them a break. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. But... no, and that's the trap game of all trap games for us. But there, like, there's a pretty gnarly lineup. So what I was kind of hoping is that we actually see us give like a big effort in those first three group stage games in Europa. Give a big effort. Get 9 points out of nine in the group. I mean, it sounds nice saying it, but I mean, we shouldn't have to struggle with Ludgratz or whatever, or Antwerp. Like, go get 9 points out of the first three games and then be able to actually rest guys during that crazy stretch of awesome teams that we play in November, December.
And realistically speaking, it might be a race for second place, so people might drop points against each other, or those three teams. So 10 points realistically might be good enough to win the group.
Yeah,
and I think Joe has a good point, too. I think if we do get second place, like, we have a better chance of hitting a team that drops out of the Champions League in that group stage. So I think it does make sense that if we win the group, then we could go much deeper, for sure. I think that is a good prediction as well. Any final thoughts on this before we switch topics?
No, I'm good.
Okay, well, we have two questions that I want to answer. The first one comes from Brooklyn Yid, or our own James. Used to be a Chicago Spurs, is now back in New York. So,
all right. Oh, here it is. Is Bale saw, or the front three of Bale, Son, Kane up front to Buku? I don't even know what that means. Should we stagger the three despite our fantasies? Somebody want to tell me what Buku means?
Is it too much?
Okay.
But what? Say it again? I'm sorry.
Okay. So Buku means too much. So is Bale, Son, Kane up front? So it would be the front three and a 4-3-3. Would that be too much? Should we stagger the three despite our fantasies?
I think it's too much for James's heart to see it. He might pass out with a heart attack. I think it's a
great... I don't want to go into graphic detail, but James might get a little overexcited if the goals keep flowing in.
Yeah, no, that's... I think that's... It's taking it back to when we had Bale and Modric. Like, it's... Like, we had that powerhouse in the front, but I mean, our mid and our defenders just couldn't keep up. I think with the squad that we have now, putting those guys up front, just keep the ball in their half and score. No, I think that's going to be a powerhouse, and I think it is going to lead to James Cordea's early grave.
Hopefully, it's going to be one before that happens.
James, a little bit more practically. To answer James' question a little bit more practically, I could see it being played like when we're playing a major opponent, and we're playing way more counterattack and we have less of the ball, I think that those three up top is going to be amazing in a Mourinho system. I think when we're playing maybe a lower league side that's playing us a little bit more defensive, we might not want to see all three of them because I don't know that we're going to have as many counterattack opportunities. And it might be a little bit too much in those circumstances. We might be better off putting a little bit more power maybe in the middle and less on the wings. But I think Mourinho can handle figuring out that situation, when to play these guys right. But I think in the big games, we're going to see all three of them, and it's going to be very exciting to watch. Yeah. Anybody disagree with me there? Looks like Lucas has...
No, I was going to say that's spot on. I think that these next couple months, it's all going to be about rotation, and that's why Jose wanted the squad. That's why he's wanted two guys at every position, as he said. So I think ideally he will time it up. If health is on our side and we can all stay healthy, the Bale, Son, Kane trio that we all fantasize about, like, that would be perfect for somebody like City or Liverpool or someone that's going to bring the ball to us. Like, I can't think of a more horrifying counterattack than those three right there. And we pretty much know what the starting 11 would be in our heads for, like, those big games. But, yeah, I think it involves those three up top every time in those big games. And you can rotate out. And that's the beauty of having that squad depth, is you can put Bergwijn instead of Bale or Lucas instead of Son. Like, you can rotate things around. Carlos instead of Kane. Like, you can have a little bit of flexibility, keep guys safe.
Is that what he's going by? Is he going by Carlos? Oh, sorry.
No, I'm just, until I've heard how it's pronounced, I'm calling him Carlos. I can pronounce that.
I think you're right on there. Like, Joe, do you expect that's what we're going to see too? Like, more of a counterattack against the big teams with these three guys, and then maybe a little bit more rotation. Maybe some of those lower Europa leagues, we'll see a little bit more of, like, the Lamellas of the world shithousing and stuff.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Jose's got something to prove, and I think that's why he kind of forced Levy to open up his checkbook. You know, he has won a trophy with everybody that he's coached, and I think a lot of the, and I'm indifferent. I'm not a Jose hater. I'm not a Jose lover, but I think that's what he's gonna do. He's gonna go out and he's gonna win those big games with these players that he bought and brought in, and he just wants to prove a point that he can do it with anybody. It doesn't have to be the Chelseas and the Man U with unlimited funds. So, yeah, I definitely
Lucas has a quick comment. No.
Real quick, I was just going to say, and I 100% agree with Joe, and it's also not like when he said, like, forced Levy to open up the checkbook. It's not like we really did. I think our net spend for the window was still under, what, like, 50 mil or something? Like, it was
cheap.
It wasn't like we broke the bank. We got all these guys for ridiculous deals, and I think he negotiated his way for loans or whatever. Like, we didn't end up spending anything. So, yeah, I think Jose is out to prove a point, and I think he will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I looked at Wikipedia, unsubstantiated, of course. But in terms of the money that is accounted for, our net spend, we only spent 41 or 40, under, a little under 42 million. I don't know if there was a loan fee for Gareth Bale, but I mean, looking right now, transfers in. I mean, Joe Hart was a free transfer. Højbjerg was 15. Doherty was 13.4. Reguilón was 25.
But what was Højbjerg? What was Højbjerg after Walker Peters? Like, that made it like 3 million or something.
Yeah. So that was dirt cheap. And then loans in, we got Vinicius and Bale. So
Bale cost us $12 million on the loan.
Even so, if we can get $12 million and we win some trophies, I mean, we were. I think we recouped. Let's be fair. We recouped a lot of that $12 million, or we will eventually with those shirt sales.
Oh, the shirt sales.
I'm eventually going to get one. So,
has Real even finished paying us for him?
I would assume it's 7 years ago, so I would assume, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. But I think when we lost the right of first return is when everything was paid off, actually. Like, I know that that went away at some point. And, like we always had the right to his first return to the premiership. And that went away, like, a year or so ago because they always rumored he'd come back for every year, and we never believed it. And then he finally did after that went away, which was funny. Kind of ironic. But any final thoughts? We have one other question before we go to half. Any final thoughts on the James's question before we wrap it up? Okay, so Jordan Lee has more of a comment for us on Twitter with a bit of a gif that he put up too.
Yes. Lucas, I want you to respond to this, of course, but his comment was, Tan guy's start to the season is just a gif of him pointing to his temple.
Yeah, I think we need to hear from Lucas on this.
Yeah.
Look, I'm going to say, I'm going to eat my words in this one. I hope. I'm not jumping 100% on the Ndombele train yet. It's just because of injury. That's why. I mean, talent-wise, none of us have ever doubted for a second that Tanguy might be one of the most talented players we've seen. Everything about him talent-wise is A1. It's just, can he stay healthy for a prolonged period of time and be giving in 90-minute efforts? We'll see. But yeah, as of right now, it looks like I'm going to have to severely eat my words, and I couldn't be more excited about that.
Oh, he's looking fantastic, and like Lo Celso seems like he's been hurt a lot, and that might be his lot in life. Like, I think he could be the type of player that has a lot of like little niggling. When he's in there, he's key for us, but he might have injuries that keep popping up, and that's okay. Because we have Ndombele now, who seems like he can do a job different but similar, and can accomplish the task that we need. And like, I just love when I see him put a through ball just super fast. And sometimes I think it's what that our attacking players are starting to anticipate it more. Like, where like early on he would do that and it would just shoot right through the whole field and go right to the defenders, and we like, what the hell is he doing there? But I think he had good ideas that just like the team needed to be able to anticipate him, and it's really exciting to see now that they are. Tommy, do you have thoughts on this one?
Not really. I kind of said my thoughts earlier, or just in general. So okay. I'll be silent and let Lucas eat his words and already have that thought in their mind.
Well, hey, this is what I said. If we win silverware and Ndombele looks like the player we hope he is, and he's dynamite for us all year, I will. Cause I remember the exact phrase I said too was Ndombele will never make it in England. So I will literally bake that. I will bake a cake, write that on it, and I will eat my words literally if Ndombele is the guy that helps us get silverware.
Well, all I'm going to say then is I hope it's videotaped, and you can send it to Kevin so he can post it on his social media accounts.
Say, well, you'll be eating half the cake with me. It's a free cake.
Fair enough.
Well, Joe, we don't even know what your impression of him was last season. Like, are you happy with turnaround? Are you expecting the turnaround? Did you think he was the player all along and just didn't have a chance?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I kind of thought he was a waste of money. And honestly, until I watched the Amazon documentary, and then they kind of went into him not kind of fitting in England, and I think that's huge. And I think that he's definitely, yeah, he's made friends with, I mean, his fellow Frenchman, and you know, Sissoko, and I think he's starting to fit in and starting to feel like, you know, England is kind of a new home. And it's his form is starting to show, and I want nothing more than to see him play well. He's Finn's favorite player, you know, so I want to see the guy do well. And I think he's got it in him. I mean, how old is he? What is he, 23?
He's like 23.
Yeah, I mean, he's still young. And, you know, so he's 22 when he moved to a different country. And I know they're professional footballers, but they're still 22-year-old kids. If this is a turnaround for what we saw, you know, the last couple of matches, I'm all for it. I'll watch Luke eat his words or eat the cake or whatever we're doing here.
Okay, well, great conversation, guys. But I think this probably is a good place to wrap up the half. So we have a lot this half to go through. So we are going to go to Luke's Locks, which we previewed a couple weeks ago. But first, and then after that, we're going to have Tommy's back page update as normal. But before that, let's go to a word from our sponsor.
Thanks, Anthony. Winning season returns at my bookie. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means Survivor, Super Contest, and Squares. At MyBookie, it's time to celebrate the NFL season. Sign up now and make your first deposit to get a dollar-for-dollar match all the way up to $1,000 and grab yourself a free entry into the famed MyBookie Super Contest. To play in the contest, all you have to do is pick five NFL games against the spread to have a chance at $100,000 guaranteed in cash prizes. The best part is MyBookie has thousands of bets to choose from the full NFL slate. We have live betting, championship futures, and everything you want to make is waiting at MyBookie. It's simple. Make your picks, win big, and collect your cash. Use promo code HOTSPUR, that's spelled H-O-T-S-P-U-R, and double your first deposit now. Of course, it's a no-brainer. Your winning season begins today only at MyBookie.
Well, now, Lucas, you probably can give us some suggestions for how they might be able to make some of those bets, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Luke's Locks debuting segment. I got four plays this week. Get them while you can before the numbers change. First one, breaking my own rule on the very first segment, I'm betting on Spurs. I try to stay away from that, but Spurs over 2.5 at home against West Ham. Spurs have no clean sheets that I can think of. We're due for giving up at least a goal, but you know us, we can put in a couple goals. So over 2.5, easy lock. Next one, Sheffield United, minus 0.5 goals against Fulham at home. Fulham has been a disaster since they started. Sheffield's coming off the loss to Arsenal. That this is a no-brainer that Sheffield's going to win at home. Liverpool, minus 0.5 goals away at Everton. That's the third one. I can't imagine a scenario. I know Everton's been great, but coming off that beatdown to Villa, I think Liverpool is going to want to step up in the Merseyside derby and kind of reassert their dominance. So I think they win by a goal at minimum. And then under 2.5 goals in Brighton away at Palace. That's a rivalry there. For the last couple, I think the last three games that hasn't broken three goals, 1-1s, 0-0s, 1-0s. So I think that I expect Palace to kind of park the bus a little bit because Brighton's been in rivalry games. You kind of want to feel off that first half. So under 2.5, Brighton away at Palace is the fourth one. There it is. Free money. Your bar tabs will thank me. Enjoy. Those are four locks.
Good luck. I think those are good picks. Thank you, Lucas. We'll definitely have to bring this segment back in future episodes. But now let's go to Tommy's back page update.
Thanks, Anthony. As usual, I'm Tommy, and this is your back page update. Tottenham Hotspur have had plans approved by the Enfield Council in August to build an amphitheater at Hotspur Way training ground. The intention is the first team and academy with social and team building exercises. It would also be used for educational purposes as a space for schools and community groups to gather. Sounds like an interesting idea, of course. Various levels, whether it be senior team, women's side, Academy, U19s, etc. They don't have to travel far to be entertained and work together. As previously shown by Daniel Levy, this can help bring the community and club together with various events. Of course, if you're a kid, who wouldn't kill for a grade school field trip like this? I know I would. Another one is regarding Spurs is that a capacity increase at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium was approved by the Haringey Council. Capacity will be increased by 547 seats from 62,303 seats to 62,850. Per the documents submitted, 62,850 is the maximum amount Tottenham Hotspur Stadium can achieve without significant alterations to the stadium. Additional seating will be across the entire stadium at lower, mid, upper tiers, and the south stand. As of right now, of course, it's only 547 more seats, but of course, it will bring more match day and event revenue. And of course, in economically speaking, every pound does count. It'll just be interesting to see what the future holds and future expansion, what additions will be needed to be made. And one could assume this probably won't happen for a while. As of right now, aside from Wembley, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium is the biggest in the city of London or greater London. Another one is per the Telegraph documents show that subsidies for stadium improvements and backdated payments can be recouped under the rebate Project Big Future. More about Spurs can get a rebate up to £125 million if approved. If this was agreed on, this would be great for Spurs. Of course, this could mean a few things. Save the money, pay off the stadium in a quicker time frame, or use the money to fund for more transfers. And this will lead to my last item. This also leads into Shubes' Twitter or Facebook question. So there's caveats with Project Big Picture. Such things would include an 18-team Premier League, increased EFL funding, which is the English Football League, getting rid of the League Cup and Community Shield, promotion, relegation playoffs, and much more. The intention of this is to cut the disparity of revenue between the Premier League and Football League. 25% share of Premier League revenue would be shared more equally among the EFL clubs. So there's pros outlined by that. It sounds good in principle, but there are some cons. I did read a Telegraph article. It does imply that the top six could get away with more and widening the financial gulf. This could, in theory, enable B teams. So the rumor of Manchester City having a B team in the Football League, that might be possible. Promotion relegation could, in theory, could be scrapped, and so forth. Another one is with the drop of two teams in the Premier League, there would be only 90 teams compared to 92 in the Football League in general. So two teams would miss out, and if they dropped outside of the Football League, they wouldn't be considered fully professional. So, unfortunately, I don't really have a full opinion on this, but if there's something to be agreed, there's going to be a lot of bargaining and a lot of editing of this agreement. But, of course, I'm Tommy, and this is your Backpage Update.
Well, and that's a good place to go into Shubes' question, and thanks for queuing that up. So what are your guys' thoughts on this proposal? Do you think that this will be beneficial for the league? Will be beneficial for Spurs, I guess, is the question we should ask as well. Even if it's not necessarily beneficial for Spurs, should it still happen? Because of the overall benefit to the competitiveness of the league and the profit sharing and keeping the league moving forward. Lucas, you got your hand up?
No, I think... I think that, like you just said, the competitiveness of the league, I think it's already the most competitive league. And by what you win, I was watching the Sky Sports thing today where they showed, like, Liverpool from winning the league got like 150 million or something, and Norwich had 100 million for being the worst team in the league. So it, despite like how the big six clubs can spend and outspend other teams, it is still the most likely to what you're getting. Even the bottom isn't making that far off from the top by like TV revenue and stuff like that. But I think anything that Liverpool and United are like pushing to happen probably doesn't bode well for the rest of the league. I think all these teams at the top are out to secure their own futures financially. So I don't think that the, like, even the thought of Man United or Man City having a B team, like, it's kind of nonsense. Like, this is all just, I'm hoping against everything with the vote, at least. I'm just hoping that, let's keep it status quo. It just seems silly to try and shake things up right now for no reason other than the personal financial gain of a couple big clubs.
Yeah. Joe, what do you think? Is this a money grab for the, from the big clubs, or is this something that is beneficial for everybody? Is what are your thoughts, or like, where do you want to see this go?
Yeah, I mean, I read this today. I think it was in the Sun. And I'm trying to find it right now. There's something that, like, the most senior nine clubs get, like, double the votes. And it's just, it's not the way. It should be 90 minutes at the end of the season, whoever's won the most games, and it should be 20 teams. I mean, it's, why are we doing something that's not broke? Why are we trying to fix something that isn't broke? I mean, you know, when they introduced the Premier League in, what was it, 93?
Yeah, two.
Then, I mean, everybody thought it was the end of football, and it turned out to be, you know, the greatest, in my opinion, and I've been watching it since then. And there hasn't really been many changes except for stupid VAR and just little things. But, yeah, it's just Man United and Liverpool just trying to, you know, swing the entire league in their way. And it's just needs to stick to grassroots football. I mean, that's what I want to see. There's no need to change anything.
That's where I'm at. Like, I'm skeptical of any change. Like, and yeah, when you see all the, I think you said it, Lucas, like when you see the top teams aligning this way, it kind of makes me a little bit skeptical about the plan in general. But Lucas, you had your fingers up for a quick point.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, like, absolutely. Like, if there was some kind of movement being led by, like, Sheffield United and Fulham or something, then you'd be like, all right, I'm actually interested to hear what they have to say. But, like, if it's coming from United and Liverpool, like, you know the interest isn't for the betterment of football or the mm-hmm. betterment of the league. It's for them to line their pockets. And what they want, too, is that ability to be able to internationally broadcast their games on their own channel, which United thinks they have over a billion fans. So United could just strike their revenue. They think one in every seven people is a United fan on the planet. And it's not for football. It's for those two clubs or those few big clubs. And exactly like Joe said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And you can just leave it be. It's a good system. It's a little even imbalanced right now, but like, I would rather have this than making it all crazy and trying to throw in new rules.
Yeah.
Shaking things up, basically.
Joe, you wanted to get back in.
Yeah, I just found that thing I was talking about. So, nine longest-serving clubs will have special status with just six votes from those clubs needed to pass a new rule. I mean, so you're looking at Liverpool, United, Chelsea, Gooners,
Everton.
And then they get to say that, you know, via whatever. It's just you're putting too much power in the clubs that are just in it for the. I mean, we're all in it for the money. But
Joe, your point is actually bang on. Because again, it's with past weird rules where they were under Fergie, when they were winning all these trophies and they were the big dog on the block, they weren't trying to pass new rules. No. And then all of a sudden they started not being able to figure it out. They were finishing in Europa. They weren't winning Europa. They lost. And then they're like trying to get the UEFA Super League or shit, whatever that nonsense was a couple years back. So yep. It's the big club that falls from the top and then is trying to grasp at anything to try and force any rules that will benefit them. And it just seems like complete nonsense if you look at the rest of the teams that aren't the big six.
Yeah, they're falling from the top and they're not doing it very gracefully.
Tommy, do you want to jump back in? Because obviously you did the research on it for your segment.
I don't know. I mean, there's some ideas in theory and principle. I think a lot of it just stems from the pandemic where they're trying to make short-term solutions where this could develop into a longer-term problem. So, for example, like when they had the Scottish First Division, they broke off and had the Scottish Premier League. It was okay for a little bit, and then, you know, Celtic and Rangers ran away with it. Rangers went bust. And then Celtic ran away with it even more. Now they have the Celtic or Scottish Premier League to try to correct everything. So I do believe that if it's not broke, don't fix it. But with this, it's like it seems a lot of things are short-sighted based on what's happening. It sounds like a great deal for lower-level teams. And it's like, oh, this could sustain us for survival for like a few years. But what's going to happen after that? The vote thing, that really irritates me. I know as Spurs fans, we would benefit from it, but that would potentially create more disparity in terms of votes. We can just railroad everybody. Or if we agree with the other teams with the majority votes, we can just railroad everybody. And I'd rather not have that because, I mean, let's be fair, it's kind of like our back again with Scottish football. I'm not a Celtic fan or a Rangers fan, but when Rangers fell, Celtic won everything. It took a huge hit in terms of credibility. What happens if other dominoes are going to fall if it sounds like if this could might happen? So we got to think. I think in terms of right now, the long-term sustainability, it's there. We just, yeah. It needs to be refined to a certain degree, but I don't know if it needs to be extreme like the proposal right now.
Yeah. Outstanding conversation. This is certainly a story we're all going to have to follow because it is kind of a little nerve-wracking. And thanks, Shubes, as always, for giving us the good questions to talk about. And it was definitely something we had to get to. We have to preview a game, so we will be back in action this Sunday, October 18th at 10:30 a.m. We'll be taking on West Ham at home. Currently West Ham sits 10th place in the league with 6 points. That's 2 wins, 0 draws, and 2 losses. Their most recent match was a 3-0 win to Leicester. Prior to that, a 4-1 loss in the cup to Everton. They beat the Wolves, beat the Hull prior to that, and lost to Arsenal prior to that. Upcoming, they take on Manchester United after us the following week, so it doesn't get much easier the following week. Their top goal scorer right now is Jared Bowen with 3, and Antonio is behind him with 2. Their top assist man is Paulo Fornals and Aaron Cresswell, both with 2. Top-rated player is Fabian Bellabueno, is it pronounced, with 7.40, and Antonio's behind him with 7.31. The last 5 times that we have faced West Ham, most recently in June after the restart, we beat them 2-0. Prior to that, we beat them 3-2 in November 2019. Then we have to go back to the first loss at White Hart Lane when they beat us 1-0. We beat them in the League Cup in October 2018 prior to that. And going back to October 2018, we beat them 1-0 in the league. So where are you guys at on this? Are you confident about this West Ham game after our recent performances, or is this one that might be a little bit more of a trap game, a little bit nerve-wracking coming back from internationals? Maybe have our head out of the game a little bit. What do you guys think is going on here? Let's start with Tommy. He looks like he wants to talk the least, so I'm going to start with Tommy.
Sure. I'll just say this. I think we usually get slow off and running, whether it be before a international break or after international break. I think Jose Mourinho has kind of changed the mentality of the club, of course. I think the players will have their head on and they'll be like, they'll know the task at hand for Sunday. I'm not going to bring the scoreline yet, but I do believe we're going to win. I think we have too much firepower. Looking at the squad for West Ham United, yeah, they're 10th right now, but I think they're going to dip a little bit because there's nobody there that's really groundbreaking. They just have a very average squad. They'll probably get lucky with – I predict they're going to get relegated earlier in the season, but I feel that they are going to get – they'll probably flirt with relegation eventually. I don't know. I'm usually not confident with games coming back from international break, but with this, I don't know what it is, but maybe it's just Jose Mourinho being manager. But
it's Bale's homecoming, Tommy.
That's true. Well, ideally, if we could, well, I'll talk about during my predictions, but and we're playing at home too. So, even if Bale makes a cameo appearance of like 20 minutes, I still think we're going to be fine. We don't have any glaring injuries. If Reguilon doesn't play, Kane, that might be an issue when we see Vinicius. But overall, on paper, I think, we should beat them in theory.
Yeah, I think we're set up pretty well for this match, but that always makes me a little bit nervous with Spurs. But this season's Mauricio Pochettino Spurs seems a little bit different. What do you think, Lucas?
No, that's kind of like what you said. Pochettino lost our first ever game in the new stadium to West Ham, but Mourinho hasn't. He's 2-0 against them. Smacked them at third place, let them back in it. Did a good job during like the COVID replay games over the summer, but I think that, West Ham's actually they've gotten a bad draw so far where they had, week one, they lost to Newcastle. They looked horrible. They had Arsenal right after that and lost. But they've also gone on then and they beat Wolves by 4. They beat Leicester by 3. So they have some power there to actually take the game to some teams. And I'm hoping that that's what we see and we can get a nice open game because Bale's return, if we can stay healthy, Son, Kane, whoever. If it's an open game, I think that we can actually light this up. So I'm very much hoping that West Ham tries to bring the fight to us. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, and before we go to you, Joe, I'm going to have Tommy read Rick's question, which I think is probably a good place to continue this conversation from where Lucas left it off. So, Tommy, Rick asks us a question about this match, or just in general, after our feelings about where we finished before the international break.
Yeah, I kind of wish I read the tweet before I had my opinion, but he said some fans are getting overexcited because of a win against a poor Man United. In a weird way, West Ham is a much bigger test. If we beat them convincingly, do you think the overexcitement is justified? And just quick note, based on what Rick's saying, West Ham could be a big trap game for us because of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and it certainly could be. What do you think, Joe?
I don't know if you guys forgot my opinion about West Ham. The players are cunts. The fans are cunts. The stadium's the worst in all of London. I almost detest them as much as I hate Arsenal. They beat us, and they beat us, and then their fans go and get the score line on the back of their shirts. I have no respect for them. I mean, they're captain. Started a whole nother thing. we're going to we're gonna play Bale. Bale is gonna score. And it's gonna be the ultimate test. Yeah, it's gonna. West Ham is a tough game. They could be bottom of the table, not won a match, and then we play them and we can draw to them or even lose. And that's what sucks about West Ham is for some reason they're even when they're in their worst form, they just pull out miracles when they're playing against us. And that's why I really hate playing them. But I totally forgot where I was going with that thought. Sorry. West Ham. It's going to be a way to prove that this that us beating United wasn't a fluke. I think if we go and we just trounce on them, because who do we have after West Ham? Sorry, I had it up in the
mind. It'd be our first Europa game on Thursday, yeah. Right?
Yep, and then we got Burnley.
Burnley, that's what I was looking at. I mean, this is the Tottenham that we're used to. We come out in the clutch, and then, you know, we could drop points the next – we could technically drop points the next three Premier League matches. Not saying that we will. I think that our squad is a lot better than we were last season. But, yeah, West Ham scares me. It always does. It always has.
Lucas has a quick point.
Yeah, I think Joe brought up a good point, though. It's something I've always said is you're never as good as you're never as – and you're never as bad as your last result. So if you get smacked, we think, like, the world's ending. We got beat pretty solidly at home against Everton. We thought the world was ending. We smacked United 6-1. We're not going to win every game 6-1. There's going to be some grinded outs, but I've never trusted a manager more than the one we have now to grind those results out. So it might not be perfect on Sunday, but like I can't imagine like, if Bale plays, he's scoring 100%.
Yeah.
I think we will grind these ways out. And yeah, West Ham, like Joe even mentioned, how they randomly just seem to like be on their game when they play us. And even that being the case, we still find a way to smack them most of these times. So I think that because this is West Ham's Super Bowl, they could lose games with it. Like Joey just said, like those, you'll get guys getting tattoos on their chest about the time they beat Spurs. Like they're a bunch of weirdos. But yeah, I think that we will, the momentum that we've had, we've got a load of guys that weren't even on international duty that have been training, guys like Son and Bale and Dombele, like, so I love the fact that we've had a lot of guys getting rested over these 2 weeks that will be ready to fire up when we come Sunday.
Yeah. No, I think this will be a good test, but I do think we will be ready. And I do like the way that Mourinho has protected the squad a little bit more than Pochettino did to come back from a international break, firing ready to go. And it does bring me confidence in how we're going to perform here. And I think that probably is a good place to go to predictions. And let's start with Lucas for predictions. Score and goal scorers.
I'm going to go 3-1. Goals by, I'm going to say, one for Bale, one for Kane. And I'll say one for Doherty. He's going to get one.
That's a prediction. Okay, Tommy?
I was actually going to think 3-1, but I'll go 4-1. I want to say we're just going to fuck him up real good. Even though I would love to beat West Ham with just a late winner in the 90th plus minute, just break their hearts in like we've done. Yeah, during my Spurs fan, we've done it 3 times, and it's just been so satisfying. But, excuse me, I will say Kane, Son, Yeah, I'll go with Bale, and then I will say Lo Celso.
Okay, good show. Joe?
I'm going to say 2-1, Kane. And I'm even going to say the spam player. Noble's going to score one just to piss me off. And then Bale is going to score in injury time to win the game.
Oh, that would be awesome. I'm going to predict 4-2. I think there's going to be at least one West Ham penalty call where they get some bullshit on us, and then maybe they get one from open play from like an Antonio or somebody like that. But I'm going to give 2 to Harry Kane. I think he is going to play, and there's nothing wrong with his leg. I do one from Bale, and I think we're going to get one from Son's going to score a goal too. I mean, I know this is pretty, but I think those are our goal scorers this time around. Definitely looking forward to this match. I can't wait for Spurs to come back and play. Any final thoughts before we kind of wrap up the conversation?
It'll be great to be, or it's great to be back after the international break. So, it'll be nice to see Spurs on a weekend again.
Oh, and it's always great to have. It's always great to have like a big win going into your international break too. Where, I mean, you could just spend these 2 weeks basking in the glory of us smacking United away. Remember a couple years ago we lost to Southampton and had like 21 days off before we played Liverpool, and we had 21 days to just stew on a bad loss. So there's nothing better. Like, if you're going to go into the international break, like do it big and get a nice win that you can bask on for those 14 days.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to wrap up the episode, Lucas. Good shout there. And thanks so much for joining us, Joe. Definitely appreciate excited to have you back in the future. Thanks, guys, for being on the pod tonight, Tommy, Lucas. But that about wraps it up. So thanks to Tommy for editing and sound, Charlie for the music, Kevin for social media, Tommy for this weekend. I'm sorry, Tommy for back page update, Kimberly for the logo, and as always, the Atlantic Bar and Grill. Even though we're not recording there anymore, they're a great place to watch. Find our merchandise on Big Head Media, and thank you to our sponsor, MyBookie. Hit the subscribe button and write a review on iTunes if you like our podcast, or give us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out on Twitter and Facebook at 4 Star Spurs and our website at 4starspurs.com. Come on, you Spurs.